Heinz Rahn says its purpose of participating in the upcoming Vienna negotiations is to ensure the removal of sanctions imposed on the country. The human rights organization says some 4,000 children have been killed since the start of the Saudi war on Yemen in 2015. And Germany imposes new tough curbs on the unvaccinated as the country's daily coronavirus cases soar to an all-time high of over 65,000. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumish Ahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Tehran says its goal of participating in the upcoming Vienna talks with the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal is the removal of anti-Iran sanctions. The Iranian foreign minister says all parties to the talks have reached a common understanding that the U.S. is the main culprit and responsible for the current situation. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a phone call with his Polish counterpart. A new round of sanctions removal talks is scheduled to start on November 29th in the Austrian capital. Earlier on Thursday, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani stated that the success of these talks depends on the will and readiness of the other parties in removing anti-Iran sanctions.
July 14, 2015. After years of negotiations, Iran signed a deal with the US, the UK, France, Germany, China, and Russia, which put caps on Tehran's nuclear program in return for sanctions removal. The agreement was dubbed the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA. At first, it seemed like there was a new era of cooperation between Iran and the West, but that optimism was soon shattered by Washington. In 2016, Donald Trump won the race to become the President of the United States. During his tenure, he adopted an increasingly hostile attitude toward Tehran. This enmity reached a peak in 2018 when Trump unilaterally pulled his country out of the Iran nuclear deal, violating an international accord and a Security Council resolution that endorsed it. He then reinstated previous sanctions on Tehran and even imposed new ones. At the same time, he threatened other parties to the deal, including its allies, with sanctions if they refused to comply with Washington's anti-Iran measures. Despite the U.S. withdrawal, Tehran declared that it would continue respecting its commitments under the agreement. That is, if the remaining parties, referred to as the P4 plus 1 group, guaranteed Iran's benefits as was promised under the JCPOA. Iran showed ample patience for the other sides to honor their end of the bargain. In fact, the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, in its 16 reports, confirmed Tehran's full compliance with the JCPOA until 2019. It was in May that year, and a whole year after the US withdrawal, that the country started scaling back its commitments when Britain, France, and Germany failed to keep their end of the deal. Iran's remedial measures were in line with mechanisms foreseen in the text of the JCPOA, particularly Articles 36 and 37. The country, on numerous occasions, said it would reverse those measures if the other parties respected their commitments. But after more than 3 years following Washington's unilateral pullout, Iran could not see any change on the part of the Western signatories. Ironically, the new U.S. administration under President Joe Biden persisted with its predecessor's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran. Between April and June this year, Tehran held talks with the P4 plus 1 group with the aim of removing the sanctions that had been illegally imposed on it. But no breakthrough was reached. Now, a new round of talks is scheduled to start on the 29th of November. Ahead of the negotiations, Iranian officials have declared that the talks must focus on the full removal of sanctions in a verifiable manner. They have also made it clear that they will not renegotiate the country's nuclear program.
As I said, these negotiations are aimed at removing the sanctions imposed by Americans through their violation of the JCPOA and Resolution 2231. We concluded nuclear negotiations in 2015, which resulted in the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA.
Moreover, Tehran has emphasized that it will only engage in talks that lead to practical results.
We support the negotiations that guarantee our national interests, but Iran will not tie its economy and the lives of its people to the negotiations, nor will it allow negotiations for the sake of negotiations. We will not let the negotiations become attritional.
The talks between Iran and the P4+1 group will start on November 29th in Vienna, and Tehran will certainly take the other side's promises with a grain of salt, considering the West's record of violating its own commitments.
Tehran slams an anti-Iran declaration issued following a meeting of European powers, the U.S., and several Arab states in Riyadh. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh dismissed the talks and the subsequent final statement as a sham, saying that they have no legitimacy. Khatibzadeh criticized the participants as instigators of conflicts who cannot make baseless accusations against others. Representatives from Britain, France, and Germany met with delegations from the United States, Egypt, and Jordan in Saudi Arabia on Thursday. They condemned what they called Iran's destabilizing activities in the region. The talks also focused on Iran's nuclear program. A Yemeni human rights organization has released a deeply disturbing report on the situation of children amidst an ongoing Saudi-led war on the country. The organization known as Intisaf says around 4,000 children have been killed and a similar number of them injured since the start of the Saudi war and siege on Yemen in 2015. It added that more than 3 million children suffer from acute malnutrition, while over 300 of them die every day due to the lack of health services and food. The rights group said the number of children with cancer has also risen due to the use of internationally banned weapons in Riyadh. By Riyadh, that is.
Yemen's Intisaf Organization for the Rights of Women and Children has held an event in the capital Sana'a to mark the International Day for Children's Rights. The local body released a report highlighting the tragic situation of Yemeni children amid the ongoing Saudi war and the blockade for the course from March 2015 to November 2021.
For 7 years, the Saudi-led coalition, with the support of the United States, has been carrying out airstrikes and killing Yemeni children. This is a flagrant violation of international law that guarantees the protection of children during conflicts and wars. The Saudi-led coalition seeks to destroy the future of the Yemeni people by targeting educational facilities and depriving the children of their basic rights. These children are the basic foundation for building a new Yemen when the war ends.
The report says 300 Yemeni children die every day due to the lack of health services. The number of children suffering from cancerous tumors has also reached 71,000 as a result of the Saudi-led coalition's use of internationally prohibited weapons in bombing residential areas.
There is injustice and grave violation of rights against the Yemeni children. On top of them, it is the right to live. Unfortunately, the Saudi-led coalition has targeted schools and disrupted the educational process. The right to access healthcare also does not exist amid the continued closure of Sana'a Airport and the lack of necessary medicines. When we talk about children's rights in Yemen, we feel pain, and only those who experienced it will feel this pain. The children of Yemen celebrate International Day for Children's Rights because it gives them hope despite their stolen rights.
Saudi Arabia and its regional allies launched a deadly war on Yemen in March 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of civilians, many of them women and children, and displaced millions more.
Yemenis say the atrocities of Saudi Arabia and the suffering of the Yemeni children are the results of the years-long war and siege imposed on the country. They believe that the UN's removal of Riyadh from the list of parties responsible for gay violations against children last year has emboldened the kingdom to continue its crimes in Yemen.
Now to discuss that further, we're joined by Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. Now, what is your take on this recent report? Well, of course, we did know that this humanitarian situation in Yemen was really concerning, but to this extent, did you expect that?
Well, it's ongoing. We've been having these interviews for years, and it's just getting worse and worse. I don't know how it can keep going on. And the U.S. and U.S. and its allies, the U.S. is doing this. Its own technicians are still monitoring and helping the Saudis bomb in Yemen and to blockade the port. That's all done with U.S. backing. And the two-faced situation now is ridiculous. Biden claims he's going to end the war in Yemen, and then it turns around and gives all the arms necessary to keep bombing, and it's the bombing of the civilians. It's really unconscionable what the U.S. is getting away with.
Do you think that reports like this one from human rights organizations could somehow help the situation?
Well, we just have to keep up the pressure. There is the motion that was put forward in the House by Ilhan Omar not to fund this recent huge purchase, which is going ahead under Biden. It's ridiculous. And it's now being also sponsored in the Senate. So Sanders is and there's co-sponsoring. It's going to be nonpartisan, and I think there is a good chance that it could pass. And Biden wouldn't dare try and back out of this at this point. So there's some hope.
Well, that would take care of the U.S. part, but we do know that the EU, also countries in the EU, are providing weapons and, of course, logistics backup.
Oh, yes. So, it's not the end of the struggle. It's going to keep going on, but that certainly would be a big... Saudis, they need the Americans there. I don't think they have Europeans. All the equipment that the Saudis are using to bomb Yemen is with American advisors, as far as I understand. So I think if the U.S. does pull out, that would really end the siege of northern Yemen now.
And basically, Mr. Wahlberg, it seems that the EU copies whatever the U.S. does, so maybe there is some hope that if something is passed by the Senate, maybe the EU will follow through.
I agree. All we can do is hope and pray at this point that this breaks, because it's really excruciating for everybody, except for the U.S. companies making money on it, and Bin Salman, if he just enjoys killing people, I'm not sure if they are getting any joy out of this, but they're the only ones that are benefiting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist out of Toronto. Moving on, the COVID-19 pandemic rages on in Europe, where several countries report a rise in infections and related deaths. The UK has reported about 200 new deaths and nearly 47,000 infections over the past day. In Germany, authorities log more than 65,000 cases, the country's highest single-day tally so far. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has already warned that the country is in a dramatic grip of a new wave of the pandemic. Leaders of Germany's 16 states have agreed to introduce new tough curbs on the unvaccinated, shutting them out of restaurants and sporting events. Those who have not received their jabs now have to provide negative test results in order to use public transport or go to public offices. Now, there seems to be no end in sight to a post-Brexit row over fishing rights between Paris and London. France is now accusing the British island of Jersey of denying licenses to dozens of its fishing boats. France's fisheries minister says the island of Jersey is not respecting the Brexit deal. She criticized Jersey authorities for not replying to 46 requests for licenses from French fishermen. She says that licenses for another 52 fishermen also expired last month. A group of British dependency islands in the English Channel off the coast of northern France is at the center of this escalating row over fishing rights. Tensions escalated last month when a French boat was seized after entering waters around the UK. In response, France threatened to impose restrictions on British trawlers and goods, but it pulled back later to create space for dialogue. Moving on, a multinational NATO battalion holds military drills in Poland amid heightened tensions along the country's border with Belarus. Troops from Poland, the United States, Britain, Romania, and Croatia have taken part in the drills. The war games are held at a military base located in the northeast of Poland. This comes amid a migrant crisis at the Belarusian border, where thousands of stranded people hoping to enter the European Union are denied entry by Poland. Western countries accuse Minsk and Moscow of orchestrating the crisis, but the two reject the accusation, blaming the West for the issue. Meanwhile, a new caravan of migrants has set off on foot from southern Mexico, heading towards the north and the U.S. border.
Our children are in danger because of the gangs and all those things. They face plenty of danger. On top of that, the economic situation has impacted us greatly. This was the same back in the first caravan that we were on, and now we are putting everything in.
The caravan consists of some 2,000 migrants, mostly from Haiti and Central America. Many of them hope to catch up with another caravan of the U.S.-bound migrants in the neighboring state of Veracruz. More than 190,000 migrants have been detected by Mexican authorities between January and September. This number is 3 times more than 2020. And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Christian Drosten, a leading virologist and coronavirus expert, has repeatedly warned in recent weeks that the vaccine and booster jabs alone will not be enough to control the spread of the coronavirus in Germany, and that physical distancing rules will have to be reintroduced. We now present you an article written by Kate Connolly. The piece is titled "Germany Set to Tighten Rules for Unvaccinated as COVID Cases Rise." Germany is paving the way for introduction of tighter restrictions on people who have so far chosen not to be vaccinated against COVID-19 in an effort to control its highest infection levels since the pandemic began. On Tuesday, 16th of November, the country's disease control agency, the Robert Koch Institute, recorded a seven-day incidence rate of 312 cases per 100,000 people, with several areas at more than 1,000. A year ago, before the vaccine was introduced, the rate stood at 139. There were 265 deaths reported on Tuesday in Germany, much fewer than the pre-vaccine peak. With the country in political limbo, the old government of Angela Merkel operating in a caretaker capacity until a new three-way coalition takes the reins of power next month, management of the pandemic appears to have lost direction. Less than 70% of the population in Germany is fully vaccinated, leaving Germany considerably behind other European countries, such as Italy, Spain, and Portugal. The spread of the more infectious Delta variant of the coronavirus, an increase in communal activity, a return to the workplace, and a sluggish rollout of booster vaccines, which are recommended 6 months after the second jab, have been blamed for the increase in infections. A rise in health conditions usually related to the colder months has contributed to some hospitals being on the verge of being overwhelmed. Some hospitals in Germany have stopped all but essential surgery to cope with the increase in patients. The state of Saxony, where 85% of intensive care unit beds are occupied by COVID-19 patients, became the latest to introduce so-called 2G rules in all non-essential shops and facilities, meaning only people who can prove they have been vaccinated or have recovered from COVID will be allowed entry. Saxony's social minister, Petra Köpping, said that in addition, tests would be required if the incidence continued to rise to the extent that hospitals were unable to cope. 2G is a reference to the German words for vaccinated and recovered, geimpft und genesen. North Rhine-Westphalia is due to follow suit, with unvaccinated people to be excluded from entry to all non-essential facilities and events, including football matches and Christmas markets. People wanting to attend carnival events as the season kicks off will be required to take a test in addition to being vaccinated or having recovered. The mayor of Berlin, Michael Müller, said on Tuesday, 16th of November, the city is also on track to introduce similar 2G plus rules. The city of Berlin hopes to reopen vaccine centers which were closed across the country at the end of the summer when they were deemed no longer necessary. But authorities have said this would happen in January or February at the earliest. The 2G regulations are similar to, though not as stringent as, rules introduced in Austria on Monday, 15th of November, under which unvaccinated people above the age of 12 in the states of Upper Austria and Salzburg have been confined to their homes for 10 days, except for necessary tasks such as going to school or going to work, to the doctor, or shop for food, or for exercise. Police are carrying out random spot checks on individuals and have the power to issue €400 fines. Austria has an incidence rate of about 850 cases per 100,000 of the population. As the Social Democrats, the Greens, and the pro-business FDP entered what they said were the final rounds of negotiations in Berlin about forming a coalition government next month, they announced they had agreed on new, tougher coronavirus measures to be applied across Germany. These include only allowing people onto buses and trains if they have been vaccinated, have recovered, or have tested negative for the coronavirus. It was unclear on Tuesday, 16th of November, how this would be implemented. Another measure being pushed by the Greens in particular is a vaccine mandate for people in certain fields of work, such as care homes or hospitals. The FDP has called for a vaccine mandate in the armed forces. The Social Democrats' Olaf Scholz, the likely future Chancellor of Germany, said he was in favor of a vaccine mandate if there was widespread consensus for it. An opinion poll on Tuesday by the pollster Forza showed that 53% of the German public were in favor of the idea. The three parties have said they will resist a blanket lockdown and instead are in favor of legislation to allow each of the 16 states in Germany to impose their own restrictions. Measures introduced as emergency legislation in the Bundestag that gave the federal government the power to introduce disease control restrictions are due to expire on 25th of November. There has been criticism of the new German government that by allowing nothing comparable to take its place, a signal is potentially being sent out that the measures are no longer needed as the pandemic is under control, which is clearly not the case. The Forza opinion poll showed that 60% of the German public are against dropping the measures. Christian Drosten, a leading virologist and coronavirus expert, has repeatedly warned in recent weeks that the vaccine and booster jabs alone will not be enough to control the spread of the coronavirus, and that physical distancing rules will have to be reintroduced. Merkel and Olaf Scholz are due to hold a video conference session with state leaders in coming days to discuss the next measures. The Chancellor of Austria, Alexander Schallenberg, said the lockdown of the unvaccinated there had already started to have an effect, with more than 500,000 people in Austria opting to get a vaccination in the days before the lockdown, and vaccine centres reporting a heavy stream of people seeking a jab since Monday, 15th of November. The Chancellor of Austria, Alexander Schallenberg, said that is exactly what we wanted to achieve. His aim was to persuade the unvaccinated to vaccinate and not to lock up the vaccinated. About 65% of Austria's population are vaccinated. In Upper Austria, one of the main hotspots, clinics reported 59 deaths in 4 days. A record number, and there were 93 COVID patients in intensive care beds, 80 of whom were unvaccinated. Under normal wards, 3 out of 4 of the 513 people being treated for coronavirus were unvaccinated. Hospitals in Salzburg said they had been overwhelmed with patients and had introduced a triage system to decide which patients should get an intensive care bed.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim, lady.
Muslim lady.
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear friends, salam and welcome to this program entitled Muslim Lady. In the studio, we have Dr. Razia Batul Najafi and her husband, Hujjatul Islam Masumi. Both of them are experts on Islamic science. Let's listen to them.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I'm Farman Ali Masumi.
So we are going to talk today about some very, very difficult, challenging issues which a Muslim lady is facing nowadays. We have to see according to the era and the time. Nowadays, in 2021, yeah, what kind of biggest challenges are just waiting for practicing Muslim lady?
Definitely nowadays, this world is full of technology, internet, IT, full of, you know, different gadgets and tablets and, you know, phones in your hand.
Exactly, yeah.
So whatever you want, you can do, you know.
Yeah, full of freedom.
Although you are alone sitting in your bedroom, but you are present in front of whole world, you know. So definitely a lot of challenges our sons, our men, they also have, and especially our women, our daughters, they have more challenges, especially an Islamic, you know, wife and daughter.
Yeah, you know why? Because of social. Because we as a women, our area, very sensitive area,
yeah,
is social. You know, socially, how I have to come and present myself, you know.
Yeah.
As a woman, we like to display ourselves, to show our beauty, yeah. And as a man, for men, it is very, very, Islam has restricted about to see, yeah, to look at that kind of scenes and beauties. And this is our test, and that is your test.
Yeah, definitely. If you do not use the social media nowadays, then people say you are not part of this world. You are something like ignorant and like
backward. Out of the society. Yeah, you're out.
So that is also not good. And if you use social media without limits, freely, with all freedom, this is also very, very harmful.
Wow.
So you have to balance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautiful. So balancing, and moderate usage of social media for girls.
Before
and for
tapping
women
with your finger, we have to think to whom we are talking, what kind of material we are sharing, what kind of pictures and videos we are sharing. Although maybe you are sharing with only family members, with mahram people, but this is social media. You know, again, the picture you share with your family, before it goes to your family member, it goes on servers. You know, anybody can see, anybody can use. Although nowadays they say this is encrypted, you know, only you and your receiver can see. But there are so many ways anybody can see. So we have to be very, very careful.
Dear listeners, let's have a short break and we will come back very soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to our show of Muslim Lady, and we are talking about what kind of biggest challenges are just waiting for practicing Muslim Lady. We have to be very modern, updated, very active in social media. Yeah, this is your modern way of thinking. You know, you never say, no, don't use it because it's very dangerous. You know, it's against of our Islamic teaching. No. You're just, you're not orthodox. You're just saying, yes, come, be present in the field of, all this amazing technology, but don't lose your values. No. Your values are more important and more beneficial for your future and present. So values are that moderation.
I would say don't let the social media impress you. Rather, you should impress the social media. Yeah.
Oh, amazing, amazing. Very powerful statement. Yeah.
This, again, it depends.
So you should
on
have your own style. Full of modesty, chastity, with so many amazing limits. Like how royal families, they have their own limits.
Yeah.
Army people, they have their own limits. So we love their limits. We respect their rules. We say, no, it doesn't suit to them because they are, for example, very
disciplined and very strict.
Yeah, it's suitable for them because they are very special people and they are belonging to the army or army because in our some countries they have very special benefits.
Facilities and
royal, Yeah, so we have to take it in a very positive way. You know, the red lines, strict rulings which we have in Islam about using social media. So we have to take it in a very positive way.
Positive way. And in our teenagers, our sons and daughters, especially, we have to pay a lot of attention. In that sense, that if we have provided them with the love, with the respect, with the friendship, so it is again easy for them, so no any stranger can attract them and they can get free to them. But if you are ignoring the rules of tarbiyah, the rules of upbringing, you are not giving them enough respect, enough time, enough friendship. So they will look for these things in social media, Then they will cross all the limits, all the boundaries, which is very dangerous.
Yeah, we have discussed before that it's so important to feed their needs.
Yeah.
So if you are a good parent, then our children, especially our girls, because they are more emotional, they will not slip away from the right path by looking for some parents on internet, the love of parents, which they are lacking, missing. Yes, and I have seen the girls sometimes, they say, no one can understand me. I'm so alone and no one is loving me, caring about me, and everyone wants to just advise me and just make me listen. No one is listening to me. So, and when they will get someone on social media that, how are you? You're looking so beautiful, nice.
Yeah.
That statement is weak point of the girls when someone start praising. And I think sometimes the boys, they praise as a evil, shaitani way. They say they know this is the beautiful
weak
way
point,
to hunt. Hunt the
girls. Look at Islam, how beautifully, how politely it says that you have to instill your children, inject your children with these beautiful doses of love and passion and respect and ihtiram and all the, modesty and chastity. Then you can easily deal with your teenagers, with your daughters and with your sons.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
There are another more important tips how to use, how to let your children use social media. If you are giving social media to your son or daughter, you can make an atmosphere that he or she uses in front of you in your house, you know, openly. You give them this much freedom. Again, it depends on the tarbiyah. If you have given all the tarbiyah doses to them, then definitely they will not fear of you. They will do whatever they want in front of you.
We have to have a very good environment of conversation, you know, time, quality time is very, very important. And for girls, I really wanted to tell them that, you know, like we as a women, we have to be more respectful towards non-mahram. Yeah, if someone is not mahram, just random, you know, some guys, they just come and if they want to say hello to you. Sometimes I have seen some girls, they are very shameless, unfortunately. The way they talk to everyone very comfortably, it's against the teaching of Islam. I remember the beautiful saying of Mawla Ali alayhi salam, our beautiful Imam. He says that, you know, the quality of arrogant, not arrogant, arrogant means, you know, that respectful, very dignity you have to show towards non-mahram, so if any guy is saying salam to you, even sometimes they come in a very beautiful way, they say, no, I have a good intention, you know, and I really want to know you more, I want to marry with you, and then they start talking about useless stuff, you know, they cross the limits, and the girl is very comfortable. That is alarming point. This guy can have the same relationship with someone else too.
Definitely, yeah. You know? If he's free with me, so in future he can be free with the other.
Exactly. Girls. So when Islam says don't talk with boys, don't cross the limits. So this is beneficial for me. You know, Islam is protecting me. Not Islam is just a strict. He doesn't allow me to talk whatever I want. I want that freedom. I want to talk whatever I want. You know, this kind of, you know, because I can say foolishness, it doesn't suit us as a Muslim lady. And, you know, statistics shows that cheating after marriage, unfortunately, is becoming very common. Yeah, like I'm a married person. I have a husband. I have a wife, but still I'm having some relationship with some other lady or a man. So why this is becoming more common? One of the reason is, again, this shamelessness.
Crossing the boundaries and limits.
Especially on social media, unfortunately. Because, you know, like, I think you and this global village, you have access to everyone, anywhere, anytime. You know, human being has become very, very, very free in this time. You know, he can say something. So we are responsible for our each click.
Yeah.
So before clicking, before following, before messaging, before typing, we have to think that to whom we are following, to whom we are talking, you know, we have to accountable tomorrow on the day of judgment. We have to answer why I have followed this person, why I'm just, you know, listening to this guy or talking or chatting to this one. So everything is very sensitive.
Again, the role of parents is very important here. You know, if they are using social media themselves, by practicing, their children will learn from them. If I'm hiding something from my children, from my family, so my children will learn slowly, slowly. Oh, we can do like this, yeah? So the most important thing is to be very truthful and very sadiq. Be very open to your family members. You know, you can just give your phone to your son and daughters. They can see and check whatever. You know,
password for
this.
Teens,
this is a very important foundation. You know, if you offer this kind of atmosphere at home, so definitely in a result, they will also let you use their mobiles, their iPads, their gadgets.
The same way about the timings, you know, how much they have to use. Inshallah, we are going to talk in our next episode. And thank you so much. I'm sure that our listeners, they have benefited from this amazing show a lot, because we were just sitting in front of the beautiful sayings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Until next episode, fi amanillah.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight. U.S. President Joe Biden's reputation for foreign policy competence was shattered by the Afghan withdrawal debacle and the loss of American and Afghan lives. Normally, loyal foreign allies complain noisily about chaotic mismanagement, and voters listened. The row with France over a U.S.-UK.-Australia defense pact, known as AUKUS, has deepened disillusion over his commitment to multilateralism. We're prepared for an article written by Simon Tisdall. The piece is titled, Old Man in a Hurry, Biden Must Act Quickly to Save His Presidency. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Is U.S. President Joe Biden failing? Less than 9 months into his presidency, rising numbers of Americans and not a few foreign allies appear to think so. Recent opinion polls by Gallup and Rasmussen put his national approval rating at minus 10 points. His overall poll average is minus 4. That compares with a positive approval rating of 19 points in January when he took office. These figures suggest one of the steepest ever early falls in presidential popularity is underway. Jolting, too, is a new Harvard-Harris survey giving Donald Trump a 48% favorability rating to Biden's 46%. Among independent voters and in battleground states, the outlook for Democrats appears grim. In Iowa, 62% disapprove of Joe Biden's performance, while 70% say the country is on the wrong track. Michigan and Virginia tell similar stories. Numerous factors are contributing to what is starting to look like a presidential meltdown. At home, Joe Biden's handling of the pandemic attracted growing criticism during a summer COVID surge. Continuing mistreatment of migrants on the Mexican border, which he promised to end, is a lose-lose issue for him. A Biden-backed police reform bill, prompted by the death of George Floyd, was killed off in Congress recently. Abroad, Joe Biden's reputation for foreign policy competence was shattered by the Afghan withdrawal debacle and the loss of American and Afghan lives. Normally, loyal foreign allies complain noisily about chaotic mismanagement, and voters listened. The row with France over a US-UK-Australia defense pact known as AUKUS has deepened disillusion over its commitment to multilateralism. Biden practiced use of long-standing connections, personal acquaintance, and avuncular charm to get his way brings diminishing returns. Chinese President Xi Jinping reportedly refused a summit meeting. Russia's leader Vladimir Putin met him in Geneva, banked the kudos, then carried on regardless. Biden waited days for a phone call last week with France's President Emmanuel Macron. Biden's recent speech to the United Nations helped explain the feeling of disappointment and disconcerted surprise that has developed around the world. His delivery sounded tired and uninspired. It reinforced the Sleepy Joe caricature that recently saw Benjamin Netanyahu claim that Biden dozed off during talks with Naftali Bennett, his successor as Zionist regime prime minister. The speech's substance was revealing, too. Joe Biden's boast that the United States, post-Afghanistan, was no longer at war is demonstrably untrue. Think of Syria and Iraq. Think Somalia. Think other counterinsurgencies where troops are deployed. His claim to be waging a new war of relentless diplomacy brought skulls from diplomatically snubbed France and others in Brussels and Beijing. Joe Biden claimed he does not want to fight China. He said, "We'll stand up for our allies and friends and oppose attempts by stronger countries to dominate weaker ones. But we're not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks." That claim sits oddly with the AUKUS pact, the refurbished Quad alliance with Japan, India, and Australia, and his call to arms in the Indo-Pacific. When Joe Biden says America is back, some who initially welcomed it, such as Germany's exporters, now tend to duck or run for cover. While international perceptions matter, it is Americans who will make or break this presidency in the next 12 months. That's all the time Biden has left before next year's midterm elections to enact an extraordinarily ambitious legislative agenda, including a $3.5 trillion social spending plan and a $1.1 trillion infrastructure package. Obstacles include a recalcitrant Republican Party egged on by Donald Trump, wafer-thin or non-existent majorities in the House and Senate, and, in another unwelcome surprise, vocal internal opposition from progressive Democrats. By linking the two measures through last-minute brinkmanship, hubris, and haggling, hardline liberals risk wrecking both. Joe Biden badly needs a big legislative win to halt the slide in his ratings and show skeptics that he can deliver. He also needs Congress to prevent a government shutdown in the coming days and a possible U.S. debt default next month by agreeing to roll over funding and increase the statutory cap on federal borrowing. Given Republican enmity, it will go down to the wire. A fierce partisan fight continues over immigration reform. Joe Biden and his underperforming Vice President Kamala Harris, maliciously nicknamed the Border Tsar by critics, were lambasted recently by their own envoy, who resigned over abuses of Haitian migrants. Joe Biden's continued use of Trump's punitive deterrent measures dismays supporters. Right-wingers say he's too soft. Is Biden trying to do too much, too quickly? Probably. There have been purported successes. The vaccine rollout, the $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill, the return of the Paris Climate Accord. In terms of forcing social change, he seems to want to make up for what his cautious former boss, Barack Obama, failed to do all at once. If Joe Biden, 79 in November, is an old man in a hurry, it's because he lacks time as well as votes. The Afghan imbroglio and the AUKUS row betrayed a tin ear. Joe Biden believes in alliances, but when the chips are down, like his predecessors, he acts in America's self-interest, deaf to the consequences of others. Likewise at home, he believes in reform, but try as he will, he cannot drown out the reality of a divided nation or the pernicious, still potent legacy of Donald Trump, who daily plots his downfall from the extra-large seat of his Florida Gulf buggy. Latest opinion poll trends and the political dynamic in Washington point to a Republican takeover of Congress next year, the thwarting of much of Joe Biden's agenda, and a failing one-term presidency. This gloomy scenario may change. Hopefully it will. But the Democratic world can only watch America's unfolding Lear-like drama, and fearing a recurring nightmare in 2024, mutter all a tremble, "Please, not Trump again."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.